Welcome to another episode of Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, talk about a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Today's hand-picked guest is John Maltz. John, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
You foolish man. So how might people know of you, John?
I am a freelance writer. For years, I wrote Crazy Apple Rumors, and I now write occasionally for Macworld and other places around the internet, and I have my own blog at verynicewebsite.net.
And it is, in fact, a very nice website. You're also on...
You know that because it's in the name. That's why I put it in the name.
You can't be telling a lie on the internet.
That's right.
You're also on... You have a podcast, don't you?
Yes, I have a parenting podcast that I do with Lex Friedman and John Armstrong called Turning This Car Around.
Which was nice. The randomness of the universe has once again worked out, because in this episode we are talking about the Next Generation episode called Reunion, which features many interesting Klingon parenting tips, I believe.
None of them good.
No, very bad. Very bad parenting. Klingons, surprisingly, not great parents, apparently.
I think much of the problems that happen in the Klingon Empire can be traced to bad parenting.
I think that is
There's
true.
There's a lot of father issues going on.
If only the Klingons hugged more, I think.
That's right.
There would be less aggression. But so tell me a little bit about your interest in Star Trek. First of all, are you a Star Trek fan?
I am a Star Trek fan. And on the spectrum of Star Trek, Star Wars fans, I lean towards Star Trek, I would say. Since that is my first love. And indeed it was my first love, because I took to it. I didn't watch it when it aired, but I saw the episodes in repeats. And back when I lived in Connecticut growing up, and we would always, my dad worked in New York, and so my brothers and I would sit down at the dinner table. My mom would feed us at 6 o'clock when Star Trek would start. And we would watch Star Trek and, you know, the original series, and eat dinner for an hour until the episode was over. And then my dad would usually walk in the door as we were done, and we would get up and leave, and he would have dinner with my mom. It was a very almost 1950s situation that we had going on there. But we got so good. I mean, we could recognize the episode. We saw so many of them, you know, saw them so many times that we could recognize the episodes within usually like the first 30 seconds of the, because they would show the first scene, and then they would cut to the the lead in, whatever the
credit sequence.
The credits. Titles. They would start the credits, yeah. And then when you came back from the commercial, they would show you the name of the episode. Well, we could always figure out what the name of the episode was before it showed.
I am a big Star Trek fan, and one of the things that I'm awful at is identifying the names of episodes. I can tell you what's going to happen in the episode, but if you ask me what the name is, I'll have no idea.
It's a lot harder now, though.
Well, that's true. There are a lot
because
more
there are
episodes.
So many more. Yeah, back then it was easier. And then I took to The Next Generation pretty quickly, and then my interest started tailing off a little bit, and I eventually watched all of them, but I'd say the first two series were my favorite.
And if you had to pick between original versus Next Generation, which one would you pick?
Oh, please stop. why do we have to fight?
Because it is the Klingon way, John.
I'll say the original series.
Bold choice.
I'll say the original series. I was always a huge Kirk fan.
Kirk is a great character.
Yeah. Less so by the time Star Trek V came out, but
Star Trek V has many issues that we cannot cover in the time allotted today.
This is not, yes.
But sadly for you, we're going to talk about a Next Generation episode, which is, I mean, it could be worse. It could be.
That's right.
Any number of other series that shall not be named. Yes. This episode is Reunion from the fourth season of The Next Generation, seventh episode, apparently, for those keeping score at home, and features the first appearance of a Vorcha-class Klingon starship, the internet tells me.
Oh, yes, okay.
Because apparently the Next Generation had been recycling the models that were used in the movies up until this season. Right. They got a little cash, so they had their own model now.
Finally.
I know. Those Klingon ships were out of warranty.
Yeah. I was surprised to find that The Best of Both Worlds was at the end of season 3. I thought it was later than that for some reason. But so this is after the events of The Best of Both Worlds.
Right. So this is post-Borg Picard.
Yes, post-Borg Picard.
And post, I guess, after, obviously, Worf has been before this episode happens. This is one of these episodes that you kind of have to know a little bit of what's happening, although they explain it. Worf, through various machinations, has been basically kicked out of the Klingon Empire, and he is no longer an honorable Klingon, because he is accused, his father was accused of betraying the Klingon Empire to the Romulans, but in fact, it wasn't his father, it was someone else's father, but he's taken the fall, because otherwise, there could be big political ramifications.
Because of honor.
That's right, honor and duty.
Duty. Yes.
And other Klingon things. So he's unhappy.
Rawr!
Yes. So we open up, the episode opens up, and the Enterprise is apparently scanning some random anomaly.
I love that. First of all, you get the eerie opening music. That,
yes.
There's something creepy going on. You don't know what it is. And then, they talk about this radiation, this strange radiation reading. And then they never talk about it again for the rest of the episode.
Forget about that radiation reading.
That's right. Remember that whole thing that seemed sort of creepy and weird at the beginning? Well, no one's going to talk about that ever again.
Yeah, so there, Wesley gets, I think, one line. And then Klingons appear.
Yes. Speaking of Wesley, he's Red Shirt Wesley.
Oh, that's right.
Which I guess happens, I looked this up because I got curious about that. It happens toward the end of season 3. That he gets the red shirt, and I found it kind of interesting that he's kind of grown up now, and then in this episode we're going to kind of get the Cousin Oliver of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
It is true. I had this discussion on a recent episode where we talked about a Voyager episode and talking about the most annoying characters in Star Trek history. I think Alexander, who was introduced in this episode, spoiler alert,
yes,
is one of the annoying characters. Wesley, of course, traditional. My most annoying character is Neelix from Voyager, if I had to put money on it.
That's pretty good. Gosh, I can't even... Jar Jar's not in this, right?
No, that's the other one.
Neelix is pretty annoying. God, I'm trying to think... Who would the most? We'll come back to that maybe if I can think of something.
Right, if you think of a character, just shout it out at any time.
Because there are definitely some really annoying characters.
There are.
Loxana Troi.
Loxana Troi.
Yeah,
but she's the voice of the computer.
I know she's great as the voice of the computer, but it's a terrible character.
Well, she's not in this episode, thankfully.
No.
So Klingons are decloaking. And there was a kind of an odd exchange between Riker and Picard where Riker says, did Starfleet tell us that there would be Klingons in the area? And Picard very dismissively is like, no, shut up, Riker. Which I thought was odd. And we never see Riker
again
in this
episode.
Were you
expecting Klingons? I was not expecting Klingons. Was anyone expecting Klingons?
Raise your hand if you were expecting Klingons.
Who ordered the Klingons?
It was just odd, I thought. And then, oh my God, it is... some character we're supposed to recognize whose name I cannot pronounce. What is
Kalar?
Kalar, yes.
Kalar, yeah.
Klingon names are going to be a problem in this episode.
Shocking. First of many shocking reveals, the shocking reveal of Kalar.
That's right. Which, once again, you have to know that Worf and Kalar have had a relationship in the past. And Worf had proposed marriage. However, Klingons do that. Probably involves pain sticks.
Yes.
So he is surprised to see her. And she says, oh, hey, Captain Picard, we need to talk, basically. And Captain Picard's like, okay, beam over, because we can't talk over subspace.
Such a thing would be inconceivable.
That's right. And he's like, hey, Worf, go meet her in the transporter room. Because
Much better to rip your molecules apart and shoot you over here.
That's right. Through the course of this podcast, I have been noticing many strange decisions that are happening in Star Trek episodes that I never really gave any thought to, but they do not stand up to the pressure of some thought.
So Kalar is half human, which I can't completely remember her entire backstory, but she's half human and is the Federation ambassador to
the Klingon Empire.
Yes. Which seems funny to me because she's very dismissive of Klingon tradition.
She is. That seems problematic. She's not it's a great
diplomat. Did she just get the job through racial profiling? Is that?
I think she did. They're like, you're
close
enough.
Like a Klingon. You go talk to the Klingons.
Exactly. You're less angry than most Klingons, so they'll talk to you. But yeah, she's quite dismissive of all of their culture and rituals, which seems like it would be a bad thing as an ambassador. But anyway, she beams over. Worf actually says, "Hey, Captain Picard, I don't want to go meet her because I'm dishonored and no Klingons should meet me anymore, apparently." And he's like, "Well, too bad. You're a Starfleet officer. Get to the transporter room." He's like, "Okay." And so he goes to the transporter room, and the woman who's manning the transporter says, "Oh, there are two to beam over." Which Worf's like, "What? Two? There should only be one." Although
set up for the second shocking reveal.
That's right. Which is a small, I was going to say Worf child, a small Klingon child, a little
Worf.
It is
a small Worf child, as it turns out. It's a small Worf child.
It is a small Worf child. The ambassador and her son appear, and her son, I was watching this with my wife, and she looked up and she said, "Is that a little person playing that child?" And I said, "No, I think it's just an awkward, small child." She's like, "Oh, yes, it is." She was standing very strangely on the transporter.
I can't quite tell how old. I mean, despite the fact that I have a kid of my own, I can't quite tell how old that kid is. I should have looked him up, but he looks like he's fairly young, six, something like that.
I think
like
he's supposed to be, at least the character is supposed to be 6 years old or so, yeah. I think. So he's you know.
But of course, it's season four, so the last time they met could not have been 6 years ago.
That's true, but according to the Wikipedia that I'm looking at, she met them in 2365. So this is 2 years after she met Worf. I don't know. The dates might not work out.
Did they just meet for the first time in that episode?
Oh, wait, no. They met in 2359.
Yeah, so I just thought the odd thing was that they had... You know, she had seen him before and not mentioned the fact that she had already had a kid
right.
by him.
Well, they were dealing with a sleeper Klingon ship full of old Klingons who were going to blow up some
right.
stuff. So she had no time to mention, "Oh, by the way, there's a kid back home."
By the way, baby daddy.
About that alimony. And Worf's like, "We're a cashless society. I don't understand."
"Please take this replicator."
Exactly. And so, what? There's a kid. Worf quickly figures it out, although he doesn't say it. And then the credits start. And then we have an interesting scene where they drop Alexander, is the name of the child. They drop him off at daycare, where they play with large blocks, apparently. And Kalar, is that how you say Kalar? She's nervous because apparently Alexander has not been well socialized at this point. So she's not sure how he will react with children, which is setting it up for later. And then, I think this is the point where they go onto the turbo lift and Worf is, she says, "Oh, it looked like you had a question earlier." And Worf says, "Are you going to make me ask the question?" And she says, "Yes." And then he gets off the turbo lift, and she immediately answers the question.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, she does not make him ask the question.
She does not at all. She's like, "Oh, should I tell Alexander he has no father?
Doesn't have a father." Yeah,
take that.
Yeah,
which Worf?
Yeah, I hate to spring this on you. I know. We've like hung out before, and I didn't mention this.
It's kind of awkward.
But geez, when are you going to be this kid's father already?
I've been single parenting is not good on my Klingon. Battlecruiser. Yeah, and that's the other thing. I don't think a Klingon battlecruiser is the best place. I am not a parent.
It doesn't seem like the Enterprise is really a great place for kids either.
No, but they, at least
the
they
amount
have
of danger that they run into on a daily basis.
It's true. It does seem like an odd thing to bring your family with you to various imperiled places. But you don't want to leave the kids at home.
And see episode of one of Deep Space Nine for what could happen if you bring your family along.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah.
Really
unfortunate consequences.
It's true, but
I don't think they thought this out.
That is true, and plus relationships in the workplace. I don't know if that's great either.
That's right.
There are many issues.
The Klingons seem like they would be a little bit more relaxed about it, just because they don't, you know, like they probably feel like it's good for the kids to see.
I guess that's true. It's all part of their warrior training
and that kind of thing. Yeah, but he's a very, you know, he is like her. very un-Klingon kind of, other than the fact that he growls at other children.
So the whole point of this episode is that there is, she is there because the Klingon Empire is near civil war, because Kimpek, who is the chancellor of the Klingon Empire, although really shouldn't it be an emperor, is near death, and two factions are fighting over it, over his seat. And we find out, oh, he's not dying of natural causes, he's being poisoned by wine that he continues to drink.
Which he continues to drink, apparently.
Yes. He enjoys wine, so really. So he's decided he needs to get Picard to be the arbiter of succession, because he wants to find out who's poisoning him. But he's going to die before he can figure it out. But he doesn't want the poisoner to become the next chancellor. And there are only two people who are eligible, I guess, for chancellorhood. Duras and Gowron. And one of them is killing him. And then, of course, Duras is the one whose father was a traitor to the Romulans, but he pawned that off on Worf. Right. So he,
just by virtue of his family being important.
Exactly, and Worf's family being not so important.
Being mostly dead.
Yes. It's helpful in some ways. So he says, hey, Picard, you have to be the arbiter of succession. Picard's like, I don't think I want to do that because I'm a Starfleet officer and I shouldn't be choosing the next ruler of the Klingon Empire. And, of course, Kimpek is like, you're not choosing anything. This is a ceremonial role, so slow your roll, Picard. It's an ancient Klingon saying.
It's a bit of subterfuge on Kimpek's part, because that's basically right. He's just involving him in order to get him to figure out which one has been poisoning him.
Right, and so he says,
he could have gotten a chimp to do the right of succession part.
Picard is just a more capable chimp in this role. He is just there. And Kimpek, of course, Picard refuses, and Kimpek says, well, too bad, I've already told everybody, so you have to do it now. Which I don't quite know why he has to do it just because he told people, but he does. Picard says, okay, takes it over.
It's peer pressure.
It is one Klingon.
Kids, don't let Klingons let you, don't let them suck you into their rituals.
That's right. And so as I was watching this, there's a couple of scenes in Kimpek's quarters on his ship, and I found Klingon quarters to be quite confusing. They're very poorly lit. He has like two captain's chairs that he sits in, and seemingly orange work vests decorate the walls. It's a very odd space.
Yeah, it seems like they should not have chairs.
It's true. They should just
it seems
stand.
Like they often comment on how soft the Federation ships are, mm-hmm. and it seems like they would just be sitting on the floor on the floor.
Like on a bed of nails or something.
Bed of nails, right.
Because it toughens you up. But I guess he's old.
A bed of pain sticks.
That's right.
Just the pain like 100 pain sticks turned upside down.
And so Alexander is... according to this, I am shocked because according to this Wikipedia article on Memory Alpha, which is a fine website for all Star Trek-related things that I am using to make sure I am recapping correctly, Alexander is 2 years old. Which does not make any sense at all.
No, he does not look two at all.
No. And he seems, yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot of two-year-olds.
Maybe the Klingons supposedly age faster. Maybe that's the deal.
He's very okay, well spoken so. For a 2-year-old as well, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, be that as it may, he causes some trouble in daycare where he growls at a child that has a block. and Worf says, hey, he doesn't correct him for growling, but he says, Klingons don't attack those that are weaker than us. So next time, attack a bigger one.
These soft humans. Don't attack them.
Exactly. And Alexander's like, but I would have won.
And he says, you must earn your victory. And then he points out the door, like, go to your room.
Get out of here. And then we find out that Alexander doesn't want to be a warrior. To yes. which Worf has no reaction, really, other than a frown, which is generally his reaction.
Eternal shame.
It's true.
Disappointment.
He's just disappointed in everything.
which is basically the crux of their relationship for all right. the way through Deep Space Nine.
Sets it up, the whole thing. And oh, those paying attention will notice, small fun fact, the actor who's playing Alexander in this episode is not the actor who plays Alexander in subsequent episodes. So, different
like
actor.
There's like four of them, aren't there?
I have no idea. I just know that this one is not the same one. Yeah. They swap them out. Well, I guess there are varying ages of Alexanders because there
is. Yeah, there's two kids who play him, I think. And then there's an episode of Next Generation where he comes back in time.
Right.
So maybe you could say that that one's not a real one. And then in Deep Space Nine, there's a grown-up Alexander.
Yes. So those are all different actors.
Yep.
They should have used the same actor and just waited. But they didn't. This is why I'm not in television.
They couldn't even wait for, you know, him to logically be six before using a six-year-old, so.
That's true. And so Garon and Duras arrive, and once again, I was watching this with my wife, and they show Garon, and she says, whoa, he has crazy eyes.
Yeah, that was the other fortuitous thing about, I thought you had, about having me on the episode, is I also have crazy eyes.
It's true. You could be, if you were cosplaying, I would suggest Garon as a good Star Trek cosplay for you.
That would be great. I think I would make a great Garon.
I think you would too. You just need a wig and a
lot
forehead.
Of prosthetics.
Yes, and you'll be set. Good to go. But he does have some crazy eyes. And Garon, and Duras is just angry. He doesn't have crazy eyes, but he's just angry. And eager.
He's not, however, I sort of remembered him being a coward.
It's true.
And he's not exactly a coward.
He is kind of, I would call him petulant.
Yes, he's definitely petulant. Yeah, but he's like, not—he's not afraid to fight Garon.
He is not. He says, "Bring it on, Garon."
And then later does get involved in another fight. So
it's true. But he is—he's there. He's like, "Hey, let's get this over with because you know I want to be Chancellor, and I don't really care that Picard is Arbiter, but let's bring it on." And then Kim Peck dies, and there's a scene in which they—I guess—they have to part of the ceremony.
Yeah,
is that they must
the fun part of the ceremony.
Exactly, they must ensure that he is dead by poking him with Klingon pain sticks, which are, if you're not familiar with the Klingons, they have sticks whose only purpose is to cause pain to those that get poked with them. Hence the clever name, Klingon pain sticks. And so they do this. Picard does it once, and he does it for like a second, and then Garon does it for a little longer.
Then all the tests get exceedingly longer.
And then Duras spends seemingly 3 minutes pushing his.
It wasn't quite as long as I actually thought it was going to be. I thought he was going to go longer, but he does a little twist at the end there.
He does.
To try and dig it in, like he's sticking the knife in.
He's
twisting
pleased.
The knife after he stuck it in.
He's pleased that Kim Peck is dead. Apparently,
yes.
And then Worf is, of course, upset because he knows Duras is no good. But Picard says, hey, listen, Duras' father was a traitor. That doesn't mean Duras is a traitor. Yes, he blamed you for it, but that was for the good of the Klingon Empire. And you're a Starfleet officer, so we must not assume the worst of Duras. Although, spoiler alert, Worf was right.
It's not much of a surprise, really.
No.
Garon is an unknown at this point.
It's true, and he doesn't look very trustworthy with his crazy eyes.
This is his first episode, and he's a character who sticks around through Deep Space Nine as well.
He does. And he's very angry as well.
And can we do a spoiler alert for that episode?
Yes.
Because Worf ends up killing him.
It's true. So
he kills both these dudes.
Worf 2.
See, I blew the end of this one, too.
Garon and Duras 0.
That's right.
Sad.
And that one's like over kind of like a management dispute.
Well,
because that guy that... I can't remember Martok.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps questioning Martok's orders, and he keeps countermanding. He's won't let Martok be Martok. So Martok and Worf get kind of mad about that, and then they confront him, and then
do what the fight Klingons breaks do.
Out. Yep, that's right. If we had more Klingons like that, we'd have less Klingons like that.
That's right. It goes back to parenting, I think.
Yes.
And so, basically, Picard's role in this episode is to stretch it out so they can figure out who the traitor is. And at the end of the pain stick ceremony, Duras is like, just tell us who, you know, just make the what does he have to do? Oh, he said basically certify the candidates by probably saying some strange Klingon phrase.
Klingon word.
And maybe hitting somebody with something. but Picard doesn't want to do it. Worf tells Kalar that he loves her, basically, and she's like, well, that's great. I also love you. But he won't marry her because he is dishonorable, and she thinks that's ridiculous. But he doesn't care, and so he leaves. And then Dr. Crusher is studying the remains of the Klingons to figure out what's going on. And Picard is frantically looking to see how he can stretch this out. And
there's a little bit of CSI Enterprise going on here.
It's true. They have to zoom in and enhance. and Dr. Crusher figures it out. We'll get to that in a moment. Oh my gosh. So Kalar, who doesn't like Klingon ceremonies and rituals but has an encyclopedic knowledge of them, tells Picard that he can do this longer process in which both candidates have to list out all their glories, which could take days or hours, which makes both Gowron and Duras unhappy.
Because they're apparently in some kind of huge rush.
They are. It is critical that they kill each other, I guess. Because that's what this basically...
An unexplained huge rush, yes. They just want to get to the fighting.
Exactly. Picard has to verify that they are candidates, and then the candidates kill each other, well, fight each other, until one is dead and the other is the Chancellor, is, I believe, how it generally goes.
Yes.
But they want to find out who this traitor is. And so they analyze the bomb. They find out it's a Romulan molecular decay detonator has set off the bomb.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, Romulans.
Yep.
And so that's... I skipped over a part where Alexander goes to Worf's quarters and plays with his batleth, which sounds dirtier than I meant. but it's a nice little scene where Worf teaches Alexander a little bit about his culture.
Because he gets a chance to show off.
That's right. He's like, no, you're not holding that right, kid.
Yeah, and another chance to snap at him.
That's right. It's
no,
true.
No.
Kids, you're just stupid little Klingons, aren't you? and so they figure out that the bomb could only have been planted by the help of a Klingon, and so they had to figure out who did it. Both are suspected, but Worf is pretty sure it's Duras.
We should also mention that they're not supposed to talk about Worf's discommendation,
right?
Like why it happened.
Yes, and Kalar is very interested.
So Kalar is very she's spending the whole episode trying to figure out what's going on,
especially after
since.
Yeah, she wasn't sure
something's happening.
She wasn't sure if Worf still loved her or was still interested in her. And once he admits that he is, I shouldn't say admits, but he expresses his interest. She's like, okay, well, this is good because I'm still interested in you, but he won't do it because he's been discommendated, and so she wants to know why, but he won't tell her. She asks Picard. Picard won't tell her. And so she starts doing some Klingon hacking.
Yeah. The official reason is, of course, because supposedly that Worf's father is a traitor, but she knows that that's not true.
Right.
She can't tell.
She's a smart cookie. Can't pull the wool over her eyes.
That's right.
The Romulan.
You don't get to be ambassador to Klingon for nothing.
No, you just have to be half Klingon.
That's right.
And then they sign you up.
It doesn't hurt. It does not hurt.
And then, let's see. What else is happening here? So she's looking into it, which causes... So she... it seems like, generally, information security technology has not advanced sufficiently.
It deteriorates over the next 200 years, is that?
It does, because there have some locked files that she cannot get into, because she wants to figure out the real story behind Worf and what happened. She can't get to it, so she basically asks a very simple query to get around it, and she gets the information she needs. But Duras gets a little, like a Google alert that somebody is looking through these files that he doesn't want anyone to look at.
So, yeah, so he goes back to his quarters and his buddy says, hey, dude, you got an email from the home world and she's checking you out, dude. She's looking at your MySpace page.
That's right. And he is not happy. So, in another, sign that security is really bad on the Enterprise.
They have one guard.
Hey, go distract the guard. And so to his flunky.
The guard.
Yeah, the guard. So the flunky goes out and does something. I don't know. Basically, he walks into the corridor and goes the opposite way. And the guard wanders off after him, saying, "Hey, you're not supposed to leave." And then Duras slips out, which is the easiest escape ever.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it's like, was that guy alone there in the room, unguarded, or was Duras, did Duras walk back to the room unguarded?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because if there's only one guard there, then at some point somebody was unguarded, probably.
Well, there's this radiation anomaly that the other crew are dealing with.
There's a whole subplot that got cut.
Exactly. So we don't know. Everybody's tied up. Riker has been taken over by this alien that lives in the radiation anomaly, and they're trying
he's
to
not, he's not in the and he's not in this episode a lot. Well, he's directing it, but
right, exactly. He's busy.
Maybe why? Yes.
And so he goes off to do something. Ooh. He does have a heated exchange with Kalar about what's happening. She's figured out what's going on. He's very angry. And long story,
which I think this is her best moment.
It's true.
Of pretty much her whole character is this scene with Duras.
Yes, it's very good because she stands up for Worf. She tells him what's what, and then she gets killed by Duras.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Sadly.
Yes.
She's dead. We don't find that out until a little bit later, but she's dead now. Yes. And then Crusher figures out what the bomb was actually. She was looking at these bodies, and she couldn't figure out what was going on. She finally figured out that the explosion had come from inside one of the Klingons. So we have ourselves a Klingon suicide bomber who was working for Duras. Dun, dun, dun. So
naturally.
We find out that Duras, all the time, has been the bad guy.
That guy you thought was the bad guy, he's the bad guy.
You were right. Crazy were Eyes was a mild distraction, but not the bad guy.
Well, I wonder if they did that. Like, how can we make people think that maybe this guy is a bad guy? We'll give him. What if we find an actor who's got crazy bug eyes?
Yeah. Because they don't try very hard at all.
He spends a minute kind of trying to bribe Kalas.
Yes, he does.
Is there a Kalar? Kalar. Not Kalas. Kalas is the original emperor of the Klingon Empire. But
he does spend like a minute saying, "Hey, maybe you could get a seat on the council if things
you
work out.
Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours."
Wink, wink, with his giant eyelids.
I don't know how he would do that since she's like the ambassador from anyway.
True, it's weird. And apparently
his mouth's writing checks that his powers as chancellor cannot cash.
That's right. And she knows. She is a student, although she rejects most Klingon culture. She knows the rules. So she's not wooed by his flimsy invitation.
Yeah, she's very versed in Klingon culture for someone who seems to hate it.
It's true. Well, she has to know so she could be ambassador, I suppose. But she doesn't have to actually follow it. So then Worf and Alexander are having a gay old time. They walk into Kalar's room, and suddenly it's not so much fun because she is dead in a pool of blood. although she's not actually dead. She is dying.
She's still, she's dying. She's gasping her last breath.
That's right. Which then led me to believe, well, why don't they just beam her to sickbay and save her life?
No, let's wait for Dr. Crusher to get here.
Yes, to come here eventually. So Worf, says, there's an emergency.
Being the only Klingon female on the ship to...
Yeah, no, they can't do that. So he's like, "Who did this to you?" And he assumes it's Gowron because of the crazy eyes. She shakes her head no. And then he says, "Duras," and she says yes. And then she does.
Not quite. She calls for Alexander.
Yes.
And she makes the two of them hold hands.
That's
and
right.
Then she dies.
Then she dies. And then Alexander gets up and stares at the wall.
Well, because Worf does the freaky Klingon
yell
thing.
The death yell or whatever they're called.
Yes. That she is coming to Stovokor.
He must alert them, the warriors in Stovokor, that she is coming.
Right.
And Alexander probably, he just saw his mother die, so that's probably a little traumatic. And then he just met his father, who he doesn't really know if it's his father or not, but he could probably smart enough to figure
thinks
it out.
Thinks it's his father.
Yeah, and then suddenly his father's screaming. So I can understand him kind of just wandering off a little bit. Worf, on the other hand, does not understand this reaction at all. And takes this opportunity as a single parent to scold Alexander for looking away from his mother's corpse.
Please look at your dead mommy, Alexander.
Exactly.
You are, be a good boy.
This is death. Get used to it.
I think he says, does he say take a good look or something? He says something like that.
Then look. You have never seen death. Then look and always remember.
And always remember, yes. That's, always that's remember.
Thanks, Papa.
Burn this into your eyes.
That's right. And then Dr. Crusher comes in and she says, oh, well, she's dead.
Yeah, right. Why didn't anybody call me?
Well, I could have saved her, but just sort of beamed her in and it would have been fine. And then Worf says, hey, Alexander, I've got to do something. You stay with Dr. Crusher. So he goes,
I gotta go kill a dude. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I gotta solve this. He goes to his quarters, takes off his sash.
That part I don't understand.
Why he takes his sash off?
Yes, I would think that he should keep the sash on.
He should, because that's
the symbol of his house. And
exactly, but he takes it off. He takes off his communicator. He takes his batleth down. He
takes off his pants.
Puts on his killing pants.
His fancy killing pants.
That's right. And then he goes on to Doras's ship, challenges him basically to the rite of vengeance. And Doras is like, well, I can't back down now, so let's fight. They fight.
And Doras's dudes are kind of like, this guy's got a legal claim. You got to fight him.
Yeah, we can't. There's nothing we can do. He filled out the paperwork. That's right. Everything seems in order. It's notarized. I don't know where he got it notarized on the way here, but
his TPS report has been impeccable.
It's all in order. And then so you think, oh, perhaps Worf is going to die. You actually never think that.
Not for a minute.
Nope. So he speedily kills Doras.
Oh, but I guess the only thing you think is that Riker and Data are on, and some other guy are on the way.
They're on the way to stop
to try and stop them.
But they don't get there in time.
They do not get there. Depends on what. They get there just in time to see the good part.
That's right. They come in. Riker's like, stop, and then Worf kills the dude with his batleth.
Right.
Which makes the succession much easier, because now there's only one guy.
That's right. The succession is over. It's done. Over.
It's done. He is Gowron. He's now Chancellor Crazy Eyes.
Yeah.
And everyone goes back to the Enterprise. Well, the people who belong in the Enterprise go back on the Enterprise. Picard is none too pleased about Worf taking
this. And I remembered this as him getting reduced in rank. But I may be thinking of a Voyager.
Yeah, he doesn't. Nothing really happens. Except
he gets a reprimand.
He gets a stern reprimand and a letter on his permanent record.
You killed somebody.
You killed a very high-ranking official in one of our neighboring empires. But other than that, you're doing a good job.
But he was a guy who tried to kill Picard one time. So,
well, that's true. I mean, Doras,
that might have factored into it a little bit.
Doras is a bit of a jerk, and I think everyone knew that. But still,
he was definitely a bad guy.
And to be fair to Worf, he did it in Klingon law. Everything it's all fine. There's nothing wrong. Klingon Empire's cool with it. Gowron is certainly cool with it because he becomes Chancellor because of it, basically.
Yeah.
But Picard points out that you are a Starfleet officer, so you have to follow Starfleet laws, which do not, which kind of frown upon killing diplomats from other civilizations. Slightly.
Strangely, it's not written down anywhere. But
it's just an unwritten rule.
We're all just supposed to know not to do that, I guess.
That's right. And then Picard says, well, now are you going to tell people that you know your father wasn't a traitor? And Worf says, no, because I have to continue with this. We have to spring it on people at the right time.
We have to milk this plot point for
that's right, because the other members of the council were part of this and they won't be happy and all of that, blah blah blah. And then we have a final scene with Worf and Alexander, where basically Worf says, hey Alexander, I'm your father, but I can't raise you, so I'm shipping you off to your grandparents, who you've never met, but they're humans and I'm sure it'll be fine.
You'll like them.
They're good. They hug. And the
do you like borscht?
Yeah, that's right.
You'll like. What do you like? Potatoes? Good. Do you like potatoes?
It's a cold soup. It's a little weird at first, but once you get over
snow.
That,
lots and lots of snow.
You'll build snowmen. It'll be fine. Or snow Klingons.
Snow Klingons.
Snow batleth. Giant. You'll have a lot of fun.
Forehead ridges.
And so that is the end of the episode. This is what I like to call a Klingon episode.
Yes, definitely.
A lot of Klingons.
It's one of the Klingoniest of Klingon episodes.
Yes, this is second. There are some episodes where they just go into, like, Worf has to go to the Klingon Empire, and so it's all Klingons all the time. This is kind of a second rung, a second tier below that of the Klingon.
It is. Yes, that's true.
Because there are still Enterprise scenes, but a heavy Klingon. So, overall, what did you think of this episode?
It was okay.
Parenting?
And I put somewhere in the middle, maybe a little bit lower than average.
Mm. It felt a little, there was the weird setup at the beginning about the radiation anomaly,
yes.
Which they seemed to, it, like you said, it seemed very important for about a minute
and then gone.
And then the rest of the episode, I mean, it's a whole, this is an excuse just to have Worf and, Alexander meet, right? But it just seems like the pretext, the political machinations seem phoned in.
Overblown.
Yeah, and there's like, it's clear Duras is a bad guy.
Yeah.
It doesn't take me to figure it out. But
they don't completely get rid of that threat either, because it turns out he's got sisters.
That's right.
Who show up later, and it turns out he's got a son who shows up later, and so there's, you know, it's not like that that whole business with him having enemies in the Empire is over since he's killed Duras.
Well, that's done.
Yeah.
We'll never.
Now everything's hunky dory in the Empire, but no. Not so.
And it does make me think that as much as I wonder about Starfleet, I wonder how the Klingon Empire can operate at all.
Yeah.
Seems like they're not great at administration.
No. And Starfleet security also not so good either.
So the things we learned in this episode, Starfleet security is awful.
Yes.
Klingon parenting is very poor. And Klingon governance is also poor.
Yeah, and there's that one scene in the where they're discussing, talking up who should be the new chancellor, and Gowron gets upset and smacks one of the security guards in the chest.
Oh, that's right.
sends him flying backward. And they're like, you're standing too close to this guy.
That's right.
He's apparently too fast for you. You might want to back up a little bit.
Didn't you see his eyes?
He's got the crazy eyes. Give him some room.
Give him some room, exactly. Just make sure your hand's on your phaser and everything will be fine.
He's the kind of guy that's going to lash out.
He does appear to be someone who will lash out at will, at very little reason.
Yeah. And I think Worf's Batliff abilities get better over time as well.
Yeah, he has a lot of practice, I think, because the
he does a nice little arm roll in this one to block
mm-hmm.
that I thought was kind of cool, but the fight scene is not exactly.
No, that's kind of the climax of the episode, and it is not all that exciting. Mostly because Worf is not going to die. the only thing is whether or not Riker will get there in time to stop it, which isn't very climactic.
It was not terribly suspenseful. Yeah.
And then, of course, they could have just beamed directly to the bridge. They don't. But another, I don't understand these beaming problems.
How does this work? Beaming. How does it work?
Beam exactly to where you want to be.
You get a nice shot of a dead Duras with a Batleth sticking out of him. So that's
true. That is a good shot.
That counts for something.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
In the annals of Star Trek fight scenes, which is not a terribly high bar. It's not among the best ones, I don't think.
No, but it does have it does have that iconic ending, so it gets points for that. But
yes,
poorly choreographed, I think.
Yeah, the problem with the Klingon episodes, there's so much Klingon posturing. There's two things. There's people acting like Klingons, and then. I mean, there's actors acting Klingon,
mm-hmm.
and then there is the mumbo jumbo of Klingon rules and honor and code that seem to
mutate and vacillate
mostly there for plot convenience, playhouse effect.
Why would I do that? Because it is written.
That's right.
Oh, all right.
This ritual is only supposed to take about 15 minutes, but...
there's subclause C, page 43.
Could, if you want to, do it the old-fashioned way.
The better way. So I agree.
There's nothing they can say about it.
That's right. So overall, I agree. Kind of a middling episode. Yeah. Even if you look at the subgenre of Klingon episodes, this is kind of a middling episode. But not a waste of 45 minutes.
No. I watched it twice.
Well, see there.
I'm still here to tell the tale.
Well, thank you, John, for watching it twice, for joining me on this little podcast. And
Pleasure.
No, the pleasure was all mine. And this
Kapla.
Is yes, this is the point at which I should have a sign off, but I don't.
So the you podcast can do what Picard just ends, says, which is Miriap.
Next time on Random Trek, we discuss a season 2 original series episode, The Apple.